Hi. How are you? It's April 22nd, 2014. Time for It's All About Food, and you know what today is. You know what today is. Okay, you're saying Earth Day, but it's my birthday. Woo-hoo! So, thank you for partying with me today. We're having a food party here on It's All About Food, where we talk about my favorite subject, the good, the delicious, the ugly. We're going to cover it all in a brief hour. And just so you know, info@realmeals.org is how you can reach me. Maybe you want to send me a nice little note today. I would love to hear it. And we're here at 1-888-874-4888. That's our call-in number if you want to say hi. I'd be happy to hear from you. All right. So what's going on April 22nd, 2014, Earth Day, my Earth Day? Lots. So let's start with the environment, shall we? Have you read the recent study on the Sustainable Pulse website? World's number one herbicide discovered in U.S. mother's breast milk. Very interesting study, but you have to keep in mind it's a pilot study. They only tested 10 women. It's not a rigorous, very conclusive study. It's just to whet your appetite, get your taste buds going, and hopefully get some interest in more serious studies about the impact of glyphosate. Now, I never know the correct way to pronounce it. You say glyphosate, I say glyphosate. It's that herbicide in Roundup Ready by Monsanto. And it's been used ever since the 70s, and it's become more and more popular. And it's a great product for Monsanto because they have created a number of different genetically modified plants where they sell the seeds for soy and alfalfa and canola. And they're trying to get more and more plants that are able to withstand the Roundup Ready herbicide. So the plant growing the food will grow, but the weeds all around it will die with this lovely herbicide. Well, now we're discovering from this simple pilot study, and there needs to be more studies. I want to make that clear. This is not conclusive, but it's very tasty, that there's a buildup of glyphosate herbicide in mothers' bodies, and urine testing shows glyphosate levels over 10 times higher than in Europe, where they don't have a lot of genetically modified food growing. So we need to get our USDA and EPA on this to place a temporary ban on glyphosate-based herbicides to protect public health until furthermore, comprehensive testing of glyphosate in breast milk is completed, right? Meanwhile, what do we do? Well, we have to keep those cards and letters going to our government officials. They need to know how we feel. But the government works very slowly, and we know that they are more motivated by getting their pockets lined with green bills than from what their constituencies really are interested in. But how do we protect ourselves? Of course, buying organic, not buying genetically modified foods, and you probably know this, but buying organic is really the only way, other than growing your own, and if you can, I really recommend growing your own fruits and vegetables. Otherwise, buying organic is really the only way we have some sort of certification that the food has not been genetically modified. And it doesn't just affect food, unfortunately. It affects the water. The water that either waters the seeds and the plants, and the water we drink. And I'm a big fan of distilled water, you know that, and there's a link on my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, for Aquanee water distillers. And I wrote to the fine people at Pure and Secure, the people that make that water distiller, Aquanee, and I asked them about glyphosate. And one of the things I love about these people is I always get a response like right away. So I wanted to read to you the response that I just got. It just came in today on my birthday, April 22nd, Earth Day. And it's interesting about glyphosate. So apparently it was discovered by Monsanto in 1970, and it was brought to market in the 1970s under the name Roundup. And it was quickly adopted by farmers, even more so when Monsanto introduced all those glyphosate-resistant crops, like I was telling you about, which enable farmers to kill weeds without killing their crops. And in 2007, glyphosate was the most used herbicide in the United States agricultural sector. Okay, so what about the water in the water? Well, apparently glyphosate decomposes at 187 degrees C. Now, water boils at about 100 degrees C Celsius. So when you're distilling, the water is boiling at 100 degrees, and all of the toxic residues are kept back in your container for you to clean up later. So it's very likely this glyphosate that decomposes at 187 degrees is staying back in your container and significantly removed from your water. So another reason to distill water. And if you want more information on that, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and click on the water link on the right side of the website. All right, so that's glyphosate. Stay away from it. And, you know, it's springtime and people are starting to garden. Now, of course, none of you are using any herbicides and pesticides on your gardens, right? Occasionally I see, well, I'll see people with their Roundup container in their yard spraying away, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? And if you see that in your neighborhood, you might have a gentle conversation with your lovely neighbors, letting them know what you think about what they're doing, not only to their plants, but to your ground and your water and your air. And, you know, that's an important thing. Being loving when you talk to people about these things, because being angry and being in someone's face never gets you anywhere. And I'm constantly reminded about how important it is to share information in a loving, non-judgmental, compassionate way. We're putting together a little documentary from March when I went to talk to 250 cattle producers about climate change. And I was not angry at these people. I just told them the truth. And when I talked to a lot of them one-on-one, and I'm reminded of this working on the footage that we took, they're just, I want to say that everyone's really good. It's just some people are maybe misinformed, confused, don't have the right information. And the only way to transfer that information is from a grounded place of love so that people can trust what you're saying. All right, shall we move on? Why not? So let's talk about genes. That's not blue genes. I'm talking about the genes that we all have inside our bodies. And we're learning more about genes. It's really very interesting information. I was at a doctor's appointment with a geneticist earlier today with someone who's very close to me who's going through an ovarian cancer experience. And I wanted to go along, and I was asked to go along because I've been there. And we were talking specifically about the BRCA genes. There's the BRCA1 and BRCA2, and you've probably heard a lot about them when Angelina Jolie recently decided to have all kinds of female parts removed because she is in a high risk situation with the BRCA genes. And I listened, I learned a lot. It was really fascinating, and we're certainly learning more and more as time goes by. But when it came to, it was pretty much the end of the appointment, and I got to ask a question. I said, okay, I've been waiting, and I haven't heard anything about epigenetics, gene expression, and nutrition. And the geneticist said, well, you know, of course we tell our patients to eat healthy. And then I looked at her and said, yeah, but nobody knows what that means. And maybe your idea of healthy is not what my idea of healthy is. And fruits and vegetables can make a big difference in gene expression and lowering the risk of people who have the BRCA1 gene in particular. And she said, well, yeah, you know how they do that. And then I said, well, look, there's been some studies. And she wasn't familiar with them. And fortunately, I had brought two of them with me because I was going to read them on the show today. And I said, here they are. Oh, and she was very nice. She said she would look into it. But there have been a number of studies. And, you know, the problem is research is expensive. And a lot of research that should be done isn't, because the people that are providing the funding for it ultimately want to get something out of it, and altruistic motives aren't what I'm talking about. People want to get profits or find ways to profit from any kind of study, a return on investment. So we don't see enough of just good, solid research to let us know how to live the happiest, healthiest lives. And when it comes to genes, people need to know that if you have a certain gene or you believe that you're at great risk of getting something, you need to know your genes are very likely not going to express themselves if you treat them nicely. And what I mean by treating them nicely is feeding them foods that boost your immune system, all those wonderful fruits and vegetables, dark leafy green vegetables. You know, there's nothing kale can't do. How many times do I need to say that? And not consuming the foods that cause inflammation, not eating the foods that cause toxins to be collected in your body. And, okay, this doctor that I was talking to was not as resistant to what I was talking to as they seem to have been 7 years ago when I went through my own crisis. So that's good. I think they're used to hearing this sort of information. But what we're going to find out in the second part of this show, which I'm really looking forward to, is that there are more doctors that know more about nutrition. Unfortunately, not the one that I talked to today. But that's okay. Maybe since I gave her those abstracts, one of them was called Breast Cancer Risk in Relation to the Joint Effect of BRCA Mutations and Diet Diversity. And in the abstract, it says, the results of this study suggest that the combination of BRCA mutations and vegetable and fruit diversity may be associated with a reduced risk of breast cancer. How nice is that? Okay. And more on food, the power of food. There was a blog in the New York Times last week called Beans and Peas Lower Cholesterol. Did you see that one? I get very excited when I read about food in the New York Times and they're talking my language, beans and peas. I love beans. And bottom line said 4.5 ounces of cooked legumes, 3/4 cups, reduces LDL 5% compared to diets without those beans and peas. And that equates to about 5-6% reduction in heart attacks. Okay, that was very nice, but I wasn't that impressed. I mean, I'm glad it was there, and I'm glad they were mentioning beans, but I believe plant-based diets can do so much more. And there's a lot more information. We talk about it on this show plenty about what beans can do, and it's not just about lowering cholesterol. But, I mean, I didn't read the details of this study, so maybe I shouldn't continue talking like I know what I'm talking about. But maybe part of the reason there was this drop in cholesterol is because perhaps those people who were doing the study got less of their calories from animal foods because they were eating a few more beans. And maybe that was the simple reason why the cholesterol dropped and no other reason. If you want to lower your cholesterol, number one, don't eat it. Pretty simple. But there are certain foods that do help you lower cholesterol. And cholesterol, we still don't know a lot about cholesterol. There are some of us, including myself, that have high cholesterol from time to time. My cholesterol bounces around And there's more to it than we know. Apparently there's this larger kind of fluffy cholesterol molecule that doesn't stick to the arteries. And I'm thinking that's what I may have from time to time. But beans are magical, not just because of the music that they make, but we've learned more about their, about not probiotics, but prebiotics. So beans provide a fuel for probiotics. So to have a healthy gut and a healthy colon, it's great to have beans because the probiotics do a lot of great work in the gut. But you got to feed them, and you have to feed them with good food. And beans provide that prebiotic to feed the probiotic. And the last wonderful thing about beans is that we don't get as many calories as we think we're getting with beans, because some of those calories get digested way, 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 way at the bottom of the large intestine and don't really count. Which is very nice. I love beans, and they come in all colors, and I can't eat enough of them, and they're cheap. Great to get them organic, and they're still kind of cheap. Okay, so that was the New York Times. And, oh, I wanted to mention, have you heard about the Food Revolution Summit? Okay, I just wanted to mention, if you go to the Responsible Eating and Living website and look on the right-hand side, there's a big, colorful banner for the Food Revolution website. My friends John Robbins and his son Ocean Robbins have been doing this, I think, for 3 years now, where they do this intensive, about 25 different experts in the food movement. If you want to get all that information all at once and you have the time, April 26th to May 4th, you can sign up and it's all free. You can listen to a lot of wonderful people that they have lined up for the Food Revolution Summit. And also, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, I had Bilal Kizilbach and his professor Elizabeth Brandon on the program, and they talked about their kale studies. Well, on my Responsible Eating and Living website, right on the home page, you can link to the kale studies article and get all the information related to this particular study. You can get the article poster, which has all the complete details, and it's there for you to read, be informed, and share. We want this material shared. Bottom line, if you remember, was the studies that they've been doing at Mississippi College is simple kale juice is killing melanoma cells in culture. And it's simple and inexpensive and wonderful information. All right. Now I want to talk about the holidays, now that Passover and Easter are over. Did you survive Passover and Easter? So much stress over the holidays. But we get through Christmas and Hanukkah and Thanksgiving, and then we have a few months off, and then we have to go through the stress of holidays again. Now, I had my own stress, and one way that I get my own therapy sometimes is to write. So I wrote a Passover little story. You can see that at responsibleeatingandliving.com. It's quick, and I invite you to read it. It's called My Passover Tears. And it's just really hard because one wonderful thing about holidays, well, there are lots of wonderful things about holidays, the family getting together, the traditional foods, the songs, and Passover is a really fun holiday because we tell a story, and children love stories, adults love stories, and it can be a fun story. It could be a boring story. It depends on who's leading the telling. And there are lots of different versions for this particular story. I support the versions that are updated with the times and take out all kinds of unnecessary language and are more liberated in terms of language with males and females and that sort of thing. But the thing that bothers me a lot about this story, and a lot about a lot of religious stories, is the hypocrisy. So on one hand, we talk about freedom and liberation, and then we bite into our brisket and don't think about the animals that are imprisoned and go through all kinds of horror. And it's very, very glaring to me, and it makes it makes the holiday very, very difficult. So I wrote a little piece, and then I got on with it and was able to enjoy the holiday. But one thing I did was I worked at creating a vegan, gluten-free sponge cake. Now, Passover is particularly challenging because there's a whole long list of foods you don't eat. Now, I don't really observe it, but I do like to make recipes that are challenging and kind of fit the rules of certain things. So I experimented three times making a sponge cake. And by the third time, I had gotten a really good recipe. I could work on it a little more, but the problem was I rarely eat sugar. And I was so sugared out, it led to depression almost just from tasting these sugary cakes. So there's the danger in holidays is sugar and treats. But should you want to try a vegan gluten-free sponge cake for your next Passover, you can check out my recipe. It's at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And then there's another recipe that I came up with. I haven't posted it yet, but I will be in the next few days. And it's not in time for this Passover, but great for next Passover. And it's a gefilte fish, okay? And it was really fun to make, and I think it's a pretty tasty thing. And, of course, it's not made with fish. And I use almonds as a base, but I can't wait to bring it out next year. All right, so there are some recipes for you. I'm looking here at what else I need to cover other than my birthday. Oh, so it's my birthday. And I've been asking you to send me information, things you like about the show or things you've learned about. And sometimes my listeners tell me about different restaurants that they've discovered in their neighborhoods. And this is really exciting because we're taken over. There are little vegan places popping up everywhere. Now, in Manhattan, there are probably more vegan restaurants than anywhere in the world. We're very fortunate to have them. But I live in Queens, which is right next door to Manhattan. It's still part of the big New York City, but it's not Manhattan. And we don't have as many vegetarian restaurants. There are a few, but there's a new one that just came to my neighborhood, and it's called Simple Veggie. The website is sveggie.com. I'm in Forest Hills, but it's right at the next town over in Rego Park. I can walk to it, which is very exciting. The restaurant that I used to walk to in Queens was the New Bodai, which is in Flushing, and that takes an hour to walk to. Now, sometimes it's nice to walk an hour, have lunch or dinner, and then walk an hour home. I do it, really, and it's delightful. But, you know, sometimes you just want to go somewhere close, and now I have a place to go to, and that's where a birthday party is going to be tonight. And if you're ever in the Queens neighborhood, just check out sveggie.com. They're very lovely people. The food has been phenomenal. It's Asian, Chinese style, and very fun and good. Okay, I think we should take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment because we have a lot to talk about. We're going to be rethinking food in the next part of this show with my guests Shoshana Castle and Amy Lee Goodman and their book, Rethink Food, 100-plus Doctors Can't Be Wrong. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's my birthday. Look, I like to celebrate my birthday. It makes me happy. And if you got to depend on yourself for most of your giggles, you know? Now, I'm fortunate because I'm surrounded by a very loving community, family, friends. It's wonderful. In fact, No, I'm on Facebook. And the birthday thing on Facebook is just kind of crazy. You hear from all these people that you don't know. But what I really enjoyed about it this time around was the birthday prelude around the world, where I heard from wonderful people from Iran and Australia and India, Argentina, Brazil. Did I say India? Nova Scotia. And all of these people were plant people, plant veggie people who believe in the same things that I do. And, I mean, it was nice to get happy birthday wishes, but to know that all these people all around the world are out there promoting healthy plant foods and making the planet a better place for not just human animals, but for all animals on this planet was like knowing that was the greatest gift that I could get. So thank you for that, all of you. I'm getting all teary-eyed all of a sudden. And somebody wrote, I just have to share this one. You know, it's so easy to get pessimistic and think that climate change is going to change the world and make it a very ugly place and, you know, all the negativity that goes around. But somebody wrote that today is the first day closer to a better, peaceful world. Because it's got to happen, right? And we get closer every day. That was nice. All right, let's move to rethinking food, shall we? I used to say that a lot. We need to rethink the way we think about food. And we're going to do that today with two guests. I have Amy Lee Goodman here in the studio with me. She's a Wellesley College graduate and co-founded the plant-based food company Zibble, Inc., that partners with nonprofits to frost a better future. She loves to travel and lives in New York. And Shoshana Castle worked in the financial sector for 25 years and sits on numerous environmental boards. A self-proclaimed super foodie, she loves hiking and splits her time between Houston and Telluride. Together, they are passionate about spreading the truth regarding healthy foods and helping to improve lives. And their next book, The Meaty Truth, The Stinking Facts About Our Food, releases fall of 2014. Another book, and we're just going to talk about Rethink Food, 100-plus Doctors Can't Be Wrong, which is a pretty thick book already that's going to keep people busy until their next book comes out in the fall. Okay, welcome to It's All About Food, Amy Lee.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And Shoshana, you're there too?
Thank you. I am indeed. Thanks so much for having us on your fabulous show. We really appreciate
you
and all that you do.
Thank you very much. Well, we're a big, happy plant family.
Yes, we are indeed.
Yes, we are. And, you know, I don't want to say that all vegans and vegetarians are happy people, but we do get excited when we talk about our food.
We do. We're very passionate about it.
Very passionate. Yeah. I think we are. They're all super foodies. Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking at this book, Rethink Food, and I'm not going to tell you about it. Why don't you tell me about it? Who wants to go first here?
Amy, go for it.
Sure. So Rethink Food features 100-plus doctors from around the world, as well as 8 nutritionists and 8 elite athletes that are all plant-based. And what they talk about are the amazing benefits that cover the entire spectrum of health that we can achieve when we eat whole, real, plant-based foods. And they cover everything in here from heart disease and how this should never, ever exist, to the cancers that we're seeing today, to type 2 diabetes, to autoimmune conditions, and the myths about protein and calcium and dairy. And they tell us how we can feed our children correctly and why our doctors are not talking about nutrition. And the simple fact is that they're not taught it. So these doctors really combine everything, and they show that we can reverse and prevent today's leading chronic conditions by simply switching to a plant-based diet. It's really all about what's on our plate.
It's all about food.
Mm-hmm. And Amy brought up a really great point about doctors not knowing about nutrition.
Yeah.
Even today, with our fabulous medical school systems, nutrition is barely taught. A few hours of classes are all that most doctors in the United States are receiving in education. So we've got very seasoned doctors in the book from going to Harvard, Stanford, Yale 25, 30 years ago saying they got no nutrition in their classes, and then recent grads from med school stating the same thing, so nothing has changed. We have doctors in the book that have their own testimonies of having horrendous heart disease, gastroenterological fungi occurring from eating too much meat and dairy, and having inflammatory illnesses all related to this ongoing bad diet habit, then themselves discovering on their own path that plant nutrition is where they need to go, the path they belong, and curing themselves, witnessing themselves reversing these diseases. So we've got probably, gosh, Amy, what, how many, 15 doctors that were very sick themselves that turned their lives around?
We do. That's been we actually had to kind of sort out which stories we were going to tell, because the interesting fact was that most doctors had their own story, either themselves or somebody in their family, that led them to discover just how powerful food is when it comes to treating disease and how it's the most overlooked influence on our health.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of doctors and nutritionists or people who have become health coaches that had stories and they discovered how plant foods could turn things around and cure them. And it's becoming more and more easier for people to take that path. I think people that started on this path maybe 20, 30 years ago without the internet, it took a lot more courage. And it takes courage as an adult, as a trained physician, as a trained nutritionist, to go against everything you've been taught and just embrace something that is so simple and to believe in it. It takes a lot of courage. But fortunately, it doesn't take as much courage anymore because we have this book, Rethink Food, and a lot of other books that have come before it to help people take this path.
So the biggest question Amy and I hear all the time, especially now after the book, people come to us for advice, so we refer them obviously to the book. But just the other day, Amy was saying, my gosh, I must have had three people ask me, so where do I get my protein from? Where do I get my calcium from?
It's still and the best
We are
question.
So programmed. Programmed. It's scary, actually. You know, I think of the movie Matrix sometime about how all the people were plugged into some computer. But, you know, in some ways, all of us, all around the world, it's not just in the United States. It's everywhere. We are so programmed. We don't know anything about nutrition, but we know the words protein, calcium, soy. That's about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and what we learned, which for us was very interesting, but it made perfect sense, is that dairy is addictive. There is an ingredient named casomorphine in milk that is, according to our doctors, Dr. Saunders wrote about this in Rethink Food, is more addictive than heroin and cocaine, which is why so often for those that are weaning off of meat and dairy, the hardest is usually cheese.
Cheese! I can't give up my cheese!
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But there's a reason for that. We can give up our milk quickly, but cheese is about 11 times more concentrated than milk in all of these ingredients, casein, whey, casomorphine, et cetera, et cetera. So the body has this really awful relationship with casomorphine, and that's really what we're craving. But casomorphine does indeed cause cancer and does indeed cause inflammation and leads up to so many diseases. And these wonderful doctors in Rethink Food attest and tell these great stories that help educate all the readers out there to make it easy to break these very bad habits that are harmful to our body, our bodies, harmful to the environment, hard on the animals, obviously.
And even in raw organic milk, is that bad too?
We get that question all the time. It really makes no difference. One of the interesting things that you have to tell people, one of our favorite questions also is, but I only eat chicken. I don't eat red meat. And what people
the
don't understand.
Vegetable.
Exactly. What people don't understand is when meat goes into your body doesn't say, hey, this is steak or hey, this is chicken. It just treats it as that's a saturated fat, that's cholesterol, that's animal protein. And it will act in your body the same way. And there's been, especially in the latest fads, this lean meat myth that we all need to eat grilled chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most comprehensive studies that we have a couple of doctors talking about, but Dr. Garth Davis in particular, is that Europe did a study called the EPIC study, and they showed that eating chicken was most directly linked to weight gain. And mm-hmm. the study also showed, which most of us know, that eating meat is most directly, or not eating meat, is most directly linked to weight loss. And so chicken really has no insignificance on weight loss. And another thing people don't understand is they think we need more and more protein. But your body can only process between 15 grams to 18 grams of protein at a time. So what does your body do with it after it's done processing that? It turns it into fat, just like anything else. Everything that our body doesn't use is either excreted or it becomes fat stores. So when we're eating all of this animal protein and wondering why we're gaining weight, and then, you know, weight gain is, you know, one of the prime conditions for inflammation and chronic disease, we're just setting the stage for our own health disaster following these guidelines.
Yeah, and, you know, I come from an animal perspective. I just don't like killing animals and treating animals poorly. And later on, as I learned more, I got all wrapped up in the health and the environment of it. But chickens are treated horribly, and they're not healthy, and we're very cruel to them.
Their legs break. 20% of all chickens in factory farms and outside of factory farms have their legs broken from their own weight that they're mm-hmm. not able to carry, and because they are so sick. But I'll tell you, I love this gross factor. Your audience will stay with me here. Something that helped me when I got off cheese many, many years ago, about 10 years ago, is when I learned that the United States Department of Agriculture allows pus in your milk. So obviously the cheese is about 10 times more milk. That concentrated dried form of milk has pus. Pus is the same pus from, well, popping a zit, which most of us have done. But they cannot measure the 8 drops of pus in an 8-ounce glass of milk, which comes from the infections from the cow who is producing massive quantities of milk all day long and getting reimpregnated again over and over and over and over, and the baby removed so that the mother can continue to produce milk for our bad habits. They're taking antibiotics, they are on anxiety pills, they are taking, for the most part, growth hormones to produce a greater amount of milk for our demand, supplying our demand, and that milk is infected milk with white blood cells, which the United States Department of Agriculture allows. So for every glass of milk that we drink or cheese that we eat, there is pus in that food.
Yum!
So, ooh!
It is,
that
ooh.
That totally worked for me. I'm like, I get it. This is for a baby, and it's not designed for me, and it helped me a lot. So I share that with your listeners.
Okay. I forgot to ask this early on, but can I just get a brief rundown from each of you about your own story, because you both have one, about how you turned to plants as your savior?
Ooh la la. Amy, go first.
Sure. So Shoshana and I actually went around the same time. I've been plant-based for about 8 years. And one of the first things that I was brought into it from the animal's perspective as well. My mom saw some videos and brought us to that point. But it really only hit home for me when My sister had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and she was diagnosed at age 9. And the doctors told my parents to prepare themselves to have my sister in a wheelchair by age 14. That's how serious it was. And my sister went through all different types of treatment. She had chemotherapy. She had Enbrel injections twice a day. And they told us that was it. Your sister's going to live on medication from the rest of her life starting at 9. And my mom's not one to take things lying down. And she loves to find the answer. And she picked up the China study. And she started reading, and in this section, there's a connection that Dr. T. Colin Campbell talks about between autoimmune diseases and animal protein and dairy. And he said that animal protein is inflammatory. It creates an inflammatory condition within our body, and that promotes chronic conditions, and it can cause arthritis. So my mom said, let's try this. The doctors thought she was literally crazy. Mm-hmm. And their first question also was, what are you going to do for protein for her? And she took my sister off all animal protein, and within 3 months, all her hot spots disappeared and she went into complete remission.
Wow.
And she has been that way ever since. And that hit home for all of us, my whole family. We all went plant-based at the same time. And that is at the same time I started to see the connection between our food, health, and environment. And there was no turning back.
What did the doctors do?
We went to them and we told them that, you know, my sister was cured and my mom gave them the China study. And they still, they don't believe it. They're like, I don't know if that's true. Like, they still are on their mm-hmm. own path.
Anecdotal.
It's very hard for them to, I think, accept sometimes.
It takes courage.
It does.
It takes a lot of courage. And it's unfortunate because how many other little girls and little boys have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis and are in a wheelchair?
Well, it's really sad because, you know, you could see my sister's whole childhood taken away. She couldn't go to school. She was too sick to go. And she lost out on a lot of the activities and memories that we all enjoy when, you know, we're yep. young. And middle school's already a bad time for all of us. So, so many more parents could be able to help their kids by simply taking that first step. And, you know, picking up Rethink Food and hearing what these doctors have to say and listening to them and seeing if they can act, you know, preventatively first and then even reverse some of the conditions their children might have.
Right. Shoshana, what's your story?
Well, it's very easy and simple. I did grow up eating lots of salads and fruits and vegetables every day all my life. So my mom is 82. And we had almost no meat in our diet. And I like not working out, but I like taking hikes, sometimes 12, 14-hour hikes a day. And I need tremendous endurance and longevity to not fatigue. And I realized that when I eliminated years and years ago meat completely from my diet, I had so much more energy. And I was just tireless. And I could just go on and on and on. And I did that because I had heard that eliminating meat and dairy entirely does the body great. And it was then after that I saw video footage, numerous footage of animals in these horrendous, miserable, disgusting, filthy situations in factory farms, suffering and the abuse and living in cement floors, breathing ammonia, not seeing sunshine, cramped in places that cause pandemics and mutations of viruses and diseases, and their eyes gouged and all the horrible things that happen in that living condition. And I thought of my dogs and my cats, and I thought of this lamb that I played with when I was a child. And I made that connection that to kill an animal is wrong. And I went into that place of praying to God and asking, help me. What do I do? The light bulb has been turned on. Help me withdraw completely from dairy and meat. And And I did it. My husband was a hunter. My husband hunted.
Wow.
And he is a strict vegan.
Wow.
He asks all the questions. He won't touch anything with whey. The other day he had to take a pill for something, and he made sure from the pharmacist that it had no dairy whatsoever in it. And to listen to a hunter, a world-class, if I could use that term, who hunted all around the world for, we don't want to go there, but, birds, to insist upon people to go vegan, to go plant-based, is adorable for me to watch.
It's very sexy, actually. Turns
totally
me on,
sexy.
That kind of thing, yeah. When's his book coming out?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yes, he absolutely needs to write one. I'm so sick of these hunter books that are talking about people who hunt and how, so trendy they are or whatever. We need a real
vegan.
And then
I watched my mom. My mom had a need for eye surgery. And she was eating a little bit of meat, just a little, and she took it out completely upon listening to Dr. Baxter Montgomery, a cardiologist here in Houston, Texas, on television when I interviewed him. So my mom won't listen to me, however she'll listen to the doctor. Eliminated all animal products from her diet, and her eyesight returned within 3 weeks.
Now, what's crazy about that, brings me back to Dr. T. Colin Campbell in his China study book, because he was talking about a population of Chinese that already weren't eating as much animal food as we do here in the Western world, although that's unfortunately changing in China. They're eating a lot more animal food now. But what he discovered was even small amounts of animal food, animal protein, can make a negative impact on your health. And your mother saw that just a little bit. Taking it away healed her.
Just a little bit. But you think about the fact, as Amy brought to our attention earlier, the body doesn't know the difference between organic and antibiotic-infected and infested meat. Well, it's a rotting corpse. Whether it's chicken or meat or fish, it still is a rotting corpse that's passing through our gastrointestinal tract. And it takes about 48 hours to get through ours, but it takes a couple of hours to go through, let's say, a carnivore like a cheetah or a mink.
Hmm.
So we have some of the doctors point that out as far as the design of our GI tract versus those of a carnivore such as the cheetah, with its teeth sharp to bite quickly through the flesh of its food source. And it passes through its 8-foot intestinal tract very, very rapidly. And it eats the flesh raw and tears through it. We don't do that. We can't do that. We don't have what it takes to break down that meat in nature anyway. And it ferments and rots in our system, which is how so many diseases today are manifested by what we eat. So we need to rethink our food.
Rethink food.
I like
rethink food. We need to have a march. Rethink food. Maybe the next Veggie Pride Parade here in Manhattan will all do rethink food as one of our chants. Now, I don't know how it ever came about, but we put doctors, medical doctors, on a big pedestal and equate medical doctors with the voice of God. And many of us just put our health or our future in their hands. Unfortunately, more people are realizing it takes a team to have excellent health, and sometimes you need to go to a doctor, but we are, all of us as individuals, are responsible for our own health. And what I found inspiring about this particular book, okay, people want to hear this information from doctors most of the time. Nutritionists are okay,
right.
Dietitians are okay, but they really want to hear it from medical doctors. Somehow it makes them feel better, even though most doctors don't know anything about nutrition. But now I'm learning that there are hundreds, thousands maybe, of these doctors all over the place that are promoting plant-based foods. That's what was so inspiring about this book, because I was familiar with a number of the different authors that are in this book that submitted information, but there were a lot of people I've never heard of before. And what just one more thing, because there are so many, they all have a different spin. They all look at things differently, and they might focus on one thing that nobody's ever talked about before. So it's just going to explode with wonderful information.
Thank you for that compliment. There's so many fantastic chapters in Rethink Food. Honestly, Amy and I sometimes are in such awe of the book because we learned a great deal in interviewing these doctors. And we cover all the bases. So the book is for the entire family. The Dear Cancer chapter has 11 cancer specialists. We've got 5 people writing about the dangers of dairy. We have 3 orthopedic surgeons that are talking about strong bones and how milk does not make your bones strong, quite the opposite. So imagine an orthopedic surgeon who has replaced over 3,000 hips telling you do not drink milk or touch any dairy products. So it's an eye-opener, and we have a chapter for children. So moms and dads raising kids, you know, you will learn that your child eating plant nutrition only is the healthiest child.
One of the problems with conventional medicine today is that we have so many specialists, different doctors specializing on one part of the human body. And we all know the head bones connected to the, however that song goes, but we are the whole body, every part of our body talks to all the other parts, and we need to consider the integrated approach. And when we don't do that, we're in trouble. So one of the things that I enjoyed was you have these little squares or rectangles throughout the book with little bits of information, and one that caught my eye was, is constipation connected to breast cancer? And it talks about how when you don't have a healthy intestinal tract, hormones aren't digested properly and they end up going back into the blood and causing all kinds of problems.
Yeah, actually,
very interesting.
One of my favorite chapters that is really different from any of the other books that have been out there is we have a walk through the body, and we literally do walk you through from your eyes to your teeth to your heart to your lungs. That was probably the most interesting, was how what we eat actually affects how we're able to breathe, which is something none of us ever think about. To every single part of our body, how we get our energy. And one of the analogies that we made was we have to think about everything we eat as in dropping a bit of poison into a clear glass of water. And it's going to completely permeate and contaminate that glass of water when you put something bad in there. And so every time you eat meat or dairy, a lot of the things that we associate with are like our heart or cancer, but we don't ever think about the associations to our eyes or our teeth. We have a periodontist who talks about how eating meat can actually can cause bacteria that can affect every single organ of our body. So everything is connected, and it's important for us to learn that. And one of my favorite lines that this was Dr. Clifton Wendt said, we have a limited number of calories a day. That's just how our bodies work. And every single thing that you put into your body is either going to promote inflammation and disease and cancer, or it's not. So you can take a 200-calorie cookie and, you know, you think, oh, it's just a cookie, but, you know, 10% of your calories for that day is going towards inflammation instead of going towards health. And it's a easy way for people to think about, you know, what they're doing to promote their health every day.
Do you not eat cookies?
I do sometimes.
Yeah. Treats are treats, and we should have them occasionally, just not every day at every meal, right?
Nobody's perfect.
Okay, we just have like a couple of minutes left, so where do we find you? You have a website for this book?
We do. It's rethinkfoodbook.com. And you can find us there at our website and check out some of the doctors that are there. We are also on Facebook at Rethink Food and on Twitter at Rethink Food Book. And we are on Amazon and Kindle worldwide, so you can get our copy of our book from there. Did I miss anything, Shoshana?
I don't think so, but your listeners are such wonderful citizens of the planet. I would love to give you some books, Karen, to give away to some of your listeners,
oh.
and I know Amy would share in that as well.
Okay.
So however way you would like to arrange that, we would like to give you some books to give to your wonderful listeners.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Let's figure that out, and I'll let my listeners know on my website and the next program, because we got to go now.
All right, thank you.
So thank you for joining me. Great.
You're fantastic.
So we're all fantastic. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Shoshana.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's my birthday. Thank you for joining me for my party, and have a delicious week.